About the new initiative that we're going to be beginning in the fall, in October, reading the Bible together as a faith community. And there are overview sheets of this available at the Information Center. If you haven't had a chance to pick them up, I invite you to take a copy of that as well. There's the Reader's Guide to the Bible, which is what we're going to be using to guide us through, and the elders will have some of them at the outside in the foyer available to you afterwards if you hadn't had a chance to pick one up last week and would like to get an early look at what we'll be doing together in the fall. Let's pray together, and I'll start by reading a portion from Psalm 103. The Lord is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness. He will not always strive with us, nor will he keep his anger forever. He has not dealt with us according to our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his loving kindness towards those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far he has removed our transgressions from us. Just as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him, for he himself knows our frame. He is mindful that we are but dust. Father, we come to you today on this Father's Day and acknowledge that you are the ultimate Father, infinite in wisdom and compassion and loving kindness expressed to us as your children. We praise you today that with full knowledge of our fallenness and weakness, you extend your grace to us when you could just as easily have written us off and given up on us. And we admit that without the grace that you extend, we would not survive. Father, I lift up to those to you today who need to experience your perfect love in many forms. Those who need forgiveness of sins. Those who need encouragement. Who need healing. Those who need to be equipped to be better parents themselves. I ask that you would supply these needs according to the richness of your mercy. And I ask now that as we look into your word, that you would add your blessing to it, that you would teach us, make us moldable and obedient to what it says. For I ask this in Christ's name. Amen. I'd like you to turn to the book of Proverbs today. I'm not going to have a specific text, but we're going to go in different places in the book of Proverbs. So if you want to put your thumb in there, I want you to first see a couple of commercials that you've probably seen if you watched any of the hockey games, but just haven't seen them in church before, okay?
Oh, honey, there's that dress I love. Can you hold this?
Yes. Yes, I will, hon. Hold you.
Welcome to the Society of Uncompromising Men. Welcome to the Wiserhood.
And there's one more coming.
What did she think?
Oh, wow. That looks great. I love it. Yeah.
I love it too, but look at the hole I just found right here.
Oh, no. I didn't see that. That's awful.
I guess we're not going to match again. This keeps happening. It was a good try.
It's a huge hole.
Yeah, I guess I'll just go with this.
Welcome to the Society of Uncompromising Men. Welcome to the Wiserhood.
The messages are subtle, aren't they? But they do a terrific job of targeting a common feeling among men. An idea or ideas that are explored pretty well in a book that I read this last summer called The Decline of Men, in which the author, Guy Garcia, explores how and why men don't know how to be men anymore. They don't know how to be fathers anymore. And then we have these Wiserhood commercials as sort of feeble pushback with an ulterior motive of selling whiskey. But because this is Father's Day, I would like to take the tagline of these commercials in a little bit different direction. Not asking what does it mean to be a part of the Wiserhood, but what would it be like to be part of a wiser fatherhood? A society of uncompromising men. Not based on whether or not you hold your wife's purse while she goes to buy a dress, or whether you rip a hole in your sweater so that you don't have to match, but a society of uncompromising fathers, a wiser fatherhood. Let me tell you up front what this would entail, and then unpack the details, and it is this. Membership in a society of uncompromising fathers or being part of a wise fatherhood means that you pass on wisdom to your children. Wise fathers, through speech and example, pass on wisdom to their children. Now, I'd like us to just look at two areas in which, as fathers, we can do that today. There's dozens of them in Proverbs. I just want us to look at two. One regarding their hearts, and the second regarding their work. Their hearts and their work. Obviously, I can't cover all that is in Proverbs on either one of the subjects, but I can touch on each of them and hand you the baton and let you take it from there. And these two bodies of wisdom that I want to touch on today have some background to them that I should just look at quickly. The first set of Proverbs, basically chapters 1 to 6, 1 to 7 in there, are of a father passing on wisdom to his son. In fact, 14 times in the first six chapters, Solomon uses the phrase, "my son," as he passes on wisdom. I also want to mention that there are two things that are not quite so obvious, but that we need to understand today. A couple of other realities that are underground, but I want to unbury. While these were primarily instructions that the father was giving to his son, in chapter 6, Solomon makes sure to mention that he ought not ignore his mother's teaching either. And so mothers are not locked out of the role of passing on instruction and wisdom to their sons. The third or less obvious thing, but perhaps bothersome thing here, is this. That Solomon, as king, was passing on knowledge to his son as a part of a patriarchal society who would then become the next king. So this is kind of a king-in-training manual, the next king obviously being male. But we live in a different age today in which daughters are independent and brilliant and take on leadership roles that would have been forbidden to them back then. Even our present queen is not a king. Therefore, what I'm saying is that these proverbs that are explicitly stated as wisdom to sons are also wisdom that can be shared by a wise father to his son and daughters. Now, at the beginning of this, we're talking about passing on wisdom, and so it's probably important that we understand what wisdom is. Let me give you some characteristics of it so you get a sense of what it is that is to be passed on. One characteristic of wisdom is this: the perspective to see through things in a number of ways. This includes being able to see through a situation to discern the causes for what's going on. The reason why you keep getting speeding tickets is because you're driving too fast. That's wisdom right there. It's also the ability to discern good from evil, truth from error. Last week we said that if you're not careful when you're watching media, sometimes you can end up calling good evil and evil good. Wisdom to see through that will keep you from believing it. And then there's a third. Not only the ability to see through things in terms of good from evil, but also to be able to see through and project the consequences of the direction that something is going. Where is this going to come out on the other side. And wisdom is not only the perspective to see through things, to discern causes, to be able to tell truth from error, and to be able to even perceive consequences, but it is also the ability to make the complicated simple. You've probably all been in classrooms, as I have been in classrooms, where a simple concept was taken and complicated into confusion. And some will inevitably leave that class saying, that presenter was so wise, so deep, so not true. Wisdom is the ability to take something that is complicated and make it simple, not the other way around. Those who make the simple complicated are not wise but foolish. Perhaps they're proud, wanting to be seen as smarter than they really are, but it is not wisdom. And finally, wisdom lives according to the truth that is discerned and learned. It's not the certificates on the wall. It's not the amount of knowledge that's in your head that makes you wise. It is the willingness to live a life based on the truth that you have discovered. And that's what we need to pass on to our kids. The ability to see through. The ability to make the complicated simple. And the willingness to live accordingly. Now, in terms of what this looks like in a concrete and practical way, I want us to move into the book of Proverbs and to first begin spiritually, to look at the heart, since the heart and the spiritual life are the basis out of which the rest of life is lived. Whatever is in your heart is going to give the rest of your life its shape. And there are two bits of counsel that have to do with the heart that a father should pass on to a child, as Solomon did his son. The first is in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, where it says this, "Watch over or guard your heart, because out of it flows the streams of life." Watch out or guard your heart. That is a word that is used to refer to guarding something from an attack from the outside. Nehemiah used it in chapter 4 as he was talking about the people guarding the city of Jerusalem from impending attack from the outside in. So like airport security, we ought to be vigilant about keeping certain things out of our hearts. If we were to develop a Department of Heartland Security, what sorts of things would wise fathers teach their sons and daughters to screen for in order to keep them out of their hearts? Let me give you just three of them, all from Proverbs itself, because Solomon wrote the instruction to guard your heart. He would probably be the person best suited to answer the question, guard my heart from what? And interestingly enough to me, the one huge repeat offender in the book of Proverbs that we are to guard our hearts from is pride. Hit three times in the book as being harmful to the heart and even harmful to life itself. Proverbs 16:5 says, "Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Assuredly, he or she will not be unpunished." Two chapters later, in chapter 18, verse 12, Solomon says that before destruction, the heart of a man or a woman is proud. As you give wisdom to your children in guarding your hearts, you need to teach them the destructive power of pride if allowed access to their heart. Perhaps helping to do that would be growing the humility and showing the humility as an alternative that is appealing to them. That's the first one, pride. The second sin to teach your children to screen out is envy. Specifically, what Proverbs talks about is envy of the wicked or of sinners. Proverbs 23:17 says, "Do not let your heart envy sinners." Now, you just got to wonder, why would it do that? Why would your heart envy sinners? Well, because it looks like they are having so much fun. And they brag as if they're having so much fun. And sometimes you can get the feeling that you are missing out on the freedom and fun that they are having. But if you believe this picture and dwell on it, on what you seem to be missing out on, envy will enter your heart and create a desire for something that is evil and that ignores what wisdom would say. Remember, we said that wisdom had the ability to discern truth from error, to know that they're not really having all that much fun, to know that the bragging is false, and that wisdom has the ability to see through to consequences, immediate consequences and future judgment. It's not only wise to guard one's heart from envy, wisdom will enable you to do that by allowing you to see through it. The third thing that Solomon would tell wise parents or fathers to tell their children to guard their hearts from is from hatred. Proverbs 26, beginning in verse 24, it says, "He who hates disguises it with his lips, but he lays up deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred covers itself with guile, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly." Guard your heart from hatred, because you end up having guile or deceit to try and cover it up and fake it. So you're not only sinning once, you're sinning more than once. He said that it even leads to seven abominations in your heart, although he does not name them. And finally, he says to guard your heart from hatred, because the hatred that is in your heart will be revealed publicly somehow. He says his or her wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. So Solomon's first wisdom for fathers to pass on to their children about their hearts is that they are to guard them. Develop a department of heartland security and teach them, model for them, to deny pride and envy and hatred entrance into their hearts. The second piece of spiritual wisdom that Solomon says that we should pass on is not only what we should have our children guard their hearts from, but how and why they should exercise them through faith. Proverbs 3, the verse that you're probably very familiar with. "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths." Fathers, you pass on wisdom to your children when you teach them and model for them that what God has written in His Word is more trustworthy than all of the notions of man combined. That our ability to fully comprehend is limited and broken. That even though it may not seem that way at times now, God and His Word will be true in the end. And yet, just acknowledging that verbally is not enough. Because if you and I say that while at the same time passing over what God has told us to do, ignoring His cautions, blowing through the stop signs in His Word, don't expect your children to either trust God or respect you. Wise fathers teach and model for their children to guard and to exercise their hearts. And out of a heart that is wisely guarded and a heart that is wisely exercised in trust will flow out all kinds of other parts of life that need to be guided by wisdom as well. And one other area that children need fathers to speak into their lives about is the area of work. If you want to instill wisdom in your children that will have them constantly in demand as employees when they get older, when they move along in their careers, then you will teach them how to work wisely. When I taught at Briarcrest, we would often have different missions agencies and denominations come through in hopes of harvesting our best grads for their cause. And I'll never forget one student who walked up to a leader of one denomination that I know does great work church planting in really tough areas. And they don't pay terrifically well as a church. They can't really afford to. And the student walked up to the leader and asked him, "How much do you pay your pastors?" No introduction, no preamble, just "How much do you pay your pastors?" That was strike one and two for me. And the guy, kind of taken back, told him what the starting wage was, and without saying, "Thank you for your time, I appreciate the information," the student did a perfect about-face, military about-face, and while the guy was still talking, walked away. That was three strikes in 3 seconds for me. We had a graduation interview process in place at the time. I did everything I could to get on his committee. I not only wanted to hear his theology of hell, I wanted him to suffer some of it. I wanted to make his graduation the most painful process of his entire life. Given a choice, he would not have graduated, in my mind, till he scrubbed dirty bedpans 12 hours a day for free for a couple of years. What I saw then had no name, but it does now. It's called entitlement. And in my mind, it is a disease that is everywhere. We might disagree on some of this, but from the student protests in Quebec, where when all is said and done, even if they had the full increase to their tuition, they would still have the cheapest education in all of Canada, to the expectations of those who are entering the workforce today, and even some who have been a part of it for years. It's like selfishness on steroids that says, "I'm not going to work hard for anything, while at the same time, I am going to expect everything." And it's revolting to future employers. It's foolish. It's revolting to God. It smacks of laziness. And it's everywhere. Mel sent me a copy of a graduation speech that was given at Wellesley High School in Boston about a week or two ago by an English teacher named David McCullough Jr. It is the best graduation speech I've ever heard in my life, and I've given some of them. They're just killer. It was obvious that the guy was sick of entitlement because he said to the graduates very early in his speech these words, "You are not special. You are not exceptional. You have been pampered, cosseted, doted upon, helmeted, bubble-wrapped, feted and fawned over and called sweetie pie, but that does not make you special." And then he goes on to quote empirical evidence to prove his point. He said, "Across this country, no fewer than 3.2 million seniors are graduating now from 37,000 high schools." That's 37,000 valedictorians. 37,000 class presidents, 92,000 harmonizing altos, 340,000 swaggering jocks, 2,185,967 pair of Uggs. And then he adds, "Even if you are one in a million, in a planet of 6.8 billion, it means there's 7,000 other people just like you." And then he got wider, and this is just classic. He said, your planet, I will remind you, is not the center of the solar system. Your solar system is not the center of its galaxy. Your galaxy is not the center of the universe. In fact, astrophysicists assure us that the universe has no center, therefore you cannot be it." Isn't that classic? It's entitlement. It's an offense to God. It contradicts mathematical and natural worlds. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have any value. We have inherent value because we've been made in the image of God. We have natural value because we've been conceived by our parents as their miracle. But any scholastic, athletic, employable, rewardable value after that is earned. Not necessarily through being the best, but through hard work. Hard work that should be taught and modeled by wise fathers. In fact, one piece of significant wisdom that Solomon gives his son regarding work is in chapter 6, verses 6 to 11. In the context there, he has already used that "my son" phrase, address, a couple of times. But here Solomon is passing on wisdom to his son in an indirect way by communicating with another person and having his son overhear what he said. You know how sometimes preteen kids will sneak out of bed and sit on the stairs and listen to adult conversation in order to learn? That's what this is like. It's like bring your child to work day when your child follows you around to see what you do and to overhear what you say. That's how Solomon's son is supposed to hear these words. As he says in verses 6 to 8, "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision at harvest." As Solomon listens, he overhears his dad calling someone a sluggard. He doesn't even call him by name, but by his defining behavior. It basically means lazy one. Or Peterson in The Message would call it, "you lazy fool," which is even better. And then after addressing this lazy person, Solomon shares wisdom with his son about work, beginning with an object lesson, which is a great teaching tool to impart wisdom, because if it's used well, it's difficult to forget. And he chooses the ant, which is a wonderful object lesson because they are everywhere to be seen. They're consistent in their behavior. All you have to do is look down and see the ant, watch their behavior, and you're reminded of the lesson. And from the example of what Solomon says here, he gives us three wise lessons that fathers ought to pass on to their children regarding work. And the first is this: wise workers show initiative. Wise workers show initiative. Where do I get that from? Well, because the ant in verse 8 that is being observed prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provisions for harvest, but all of this is taking place without any supervision. The work of verse 8 takes place despite the fact that there is no chief or officer or ruler. Instead, they just see the need and take the initiative to meet it without being asked or told. Instilling that kind of wisdom of initiating work might begin by teaching and showing your child that when they put the final item in the trash bin that just about overfills it, that they are to then take that bag out and replace it with a new one rather than hope that somebody else does it. They learn from listening to and watching you. The initiative that you take in taking 10 seconds away from the game to take your plate to the sink rather than hoping that it grows wings and flies there. They learn from you and they observe that you fill the gas tank when it's almost empty rather than turning off the car at stoplights and coasting down hills in hopes of making filling the car somebody else's problem. It means you put on your shoes and bring in the groceries without being asked. To teach wisdom and work means that both through instruction and through example, you demonstrate initiative, responding to a need without being asked. When your son or daughter catches that, employees will chase them. Employers will chase them, I'm sorry. Teaching wisdom and work further means that you will teach your children that they should not need to be supervised in order to do their jobs well. In other words, not just initiative, taking on a task without being told, but responsibility, doing a task well without being watched. Practically speaking, around the church, it would mean that the same level of work and hours, etc., are being put in whether I'm here or not. Nothing should change. Your supervisor should be able to peek in the window at you, or you peek in the window at your child, and without either of you knowing you're being watched, see the same quality and quantity of work that would happen if they were standing there looking over your shoulder. With the ants, there's no chief ruler. There's no one cracking the whip. There's no one looking over their shoulders. They're just responsible to do their jobs. You instill that wisdom in your children through example and through teaching. And only an economic depression will have them in want of a job. And the final thing that you impart in terms of work, working wisdom, is that they need to have endurance for the long haul. You teach them endurance for the long haul. In verse 8, there are two stages there, each beginning at the beginning of a phrase. There's preparation and there's harvesting. In other words, the ant is working for back-to-back seasons for the long haul. The 1980 Calgary rock group Loverboy sang, "Everybody's working for the weekend. Put in the five so you can blow the two." What wisdom would sing is everybody should be working for the long haul. It's endurance. Wisdom and work that will make your son or daughter a sought-after and valued employee begins when they're young, when fathers teach and model for them initiative, responsibility, and endurance. And to make his point about wisdom and work all that much stronger, Solomon then contrasts the behavior of the ant with this lazy person, and says this in verses 9 to 11. "How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep?" And then he gives the lazy guy a voice, and he says, "A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man." And here we see some of the characteristics of a lazy person that we don't want to characterize our children. Because the contrast of the ant and the sluggard are tied together, the season that the ant is living in and the season that the man is living in is the same season. It's harvest time. But instead of harvesting and working, the lazy person is sleeping. In the place of initiative, you have procrastination. And Solomon asked the question for his son to overhear, "How long will you procrastinate while opportunity knocks?" Procrastination in the place of initiative. The key to the second contrast is a repeated word in verse 10, where the lazy man says, "A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands." What is he doing through what he is saying? Well, he's deceiving himself by the seeming smallness of his surrenders to laziness. It's just a little sleep, just a little slumber, just a little break. And so moment by moment, opportunity slips away. Moment by moment, he excuses it away by deceiving himself. Now, the chances are good that your child or children are going to spend 40-plus hours a week for much of their lives working. And as fathers, we have the calling to wisely shape them for those 40-plus hours a week, implanting in them through instruction and example the desire to work wisely and to shirk laziness. Now, please understand that Solomon's not trying to shape his son into a workaholic without boundaries or God-honoring priorities like Sabbath rest and family time. What he is concerned about, however, is that wise fathers teach their children how to work rather than shirk, how to earn respect rather than expect it. The wisdom of work. You know, you can tell when a dog has been beaten, because when you raise your hand or even when you're reaching out to pet it, it will instinctively flinch and brace for the blow to come. That's often the picture I have in my mind of dads coming to Father's Day services. praise the moms and pound the dads is kind of the pattern that I grew up hearing. And to be very honest, it makes me sick. Especially because I know that some of the best dads in the city are in this church. I know that many of you are trying hard. Some of you are succeeding very well. I also know that some of you are carrying around a mistake that you made last year, like a millstone around your neck that just doesn't belong there. You know what I realized as I reflected on these proverbs from Solomon, wise as they were, that the wisest man who ever lived failed to finish well in keeping with the wisdom that he shared. He did not guard his own heart well, and so ended up worshiping idols and sending a united and prosperous kingdom into civil war. He ended up with a son who listened to foolish counsel rather than wise counsel. And if Solomon in all of his wisdom can blow it, we certainly need the help from God and the prayer support of one another as fathers. If Solomon's son could walk away from his father's counsel, and it could certainly happen to us as well. So we need the help of God and the prayers of one another. I would bet that we've got fathers all over the map today. Older, successful fathers, fathers starting out, fathers who just need a fresh start, some whose children have shirked your wisdom that you have shared and gone off to a far country and buying land there. And I put the prayer time at the end of the service so that we can pray for one another. I only want dads on the prayer team this morning. And you don't have to be a great dad to be up here. You just have to be a dad who's willing not to pray for but with another father, sharing together and calling on God to help you in your calling, to perhaps lead your wayward child back to Him, to forgive you for something that you have done wrong, to empower you in areas where you are weak. And so as we sing, I would invite fathers from all over the place to come and to pray for one another at the front.